Welcome to Critical Eyes podcast, Leadership in Uncertain Times. My name is Mark Barber, Managing Editor at Critical Eye. Today we're going to be looking at the challenges that CEOs and leaderships are facing in these extraordinary times. We're going to be looking at the forward agenda for CEOs and leadership teams, because there clearly is a lot of uncertainty out there. To share some thoughts around what he's seeing in the marketplace, we have Matthew Blagg, CEO of Critical Eye. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi. Hi, Mark.
It's a complex picture, isn't it, for leadership teams out there?
I think we've been talking about complexity for the last number of years and disruption and change. And I think what we realised we were having chats about really small amounts of disruption and small amounts of change. And this is proper disruption at a global scale in all areas. And I think it's impossible to underestimate the implication and the change that we're all going through and what the impact will be for all of us in society.
And I think what's interesting talking to execs is it's understanding, okay, what's the short-term change, the short-term disruption, what's medium and what's permanent, what's here to stay, and really trying to understand those different factors and balancing them. We had our virtual CEO retreat in May, and there was a comment which struck a chord with a lot of people, and it was that the sprint is over, now it's time for the marathon. Is that how you see it as well?
Yes and no. I mean, you can argue that leadership is about a series of sprints that overall come together as a marathon. And what I do think that you can articulate that we've gone through a very, very intense period, which was the medical component.
Yeah.
I think we're coming towards a very intense period, which is the economic sort of sprint. And I think there is a marathon because there is a reality that we'll only know we're out of this when we're out of it. And I think in most predictions, it's probably 2 years of turmoil, and we're probably in the first year of that. So I think what you do need to recognise that this isn't something that's going to solve itself overnight. The implications are going to resonate over a period of time. And I think that the reference of 10 years of change in 1 year around 2020 is probably true, but I think you'll only know that what those changes were probably in 2 to 3 years' time.
Yeah, when we look at this, I mean, it has been encouraging. I think investors broadly so far have been supportive. Leadership teams have come together in a crisis, which you would expect. But again, that's in the, if you want to call it, the healthcare aspect of this crisis. And now we are moving into the economic reality where, I mean, the predictions for the recession we're heading into are mind-blowing. Do you see the cracks starting to occur in leadership teams?
I think that you're beginning to get to the point when you start looking at not the survival element, where I think everyone does line up. And I think investors are relieved to still have a share in a business, and so they're very supportive of the decisions that are made. I think that because this has got some unique elements that actually you couldn't touch the business in most cases, that the leadership and staff had to work remotely. I mean, huge, immense movement and change, and everyone's been incredibly supportive.
Yeah.
I think you're getting towards the stage where you're going to get people jockeying for different elements. So your stakeholder complexity, whereas everyone probably lined up, is now starting to pull in different directions, whether that's government, your customers, your employees, society as a whole. And I think from a leadership perspective, you're now sitting in an environment where everything is incredibly fluid, where you're managing real variants of issues in a real-time basis, and you're isolated. And I think the isolation bit is becoming more apparent, and it's coming out of the research that we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, we did a poll, didn't we, at the CEO retreat, and over half of respondents said that the CEOs are feeling isolated in their role, which, when we've run that before, it's like 10%, max, whereas now over half. It's significant, isn't it? So clearly people are feeling it.
Well, I think you just have to go into basics here. I mean, if you become a senior executive of an organisation, you're a pretty competent leader, you're pretty competent in strategy, and you're pretty competent about stakeholder elements. Now, you'll have possibly 5 to 7% of issues that you feel insecure about. Right now, it's the opposite. You've probably got about 7% degree of understanding of things that you're very comfortable with, and about 93% of insecurity. And I think that by its very nature, you're there to provide a degree of certainty. And in an uncertain time, that becomes really difficult. And you have to keep your own counsel. You know, you have to really understand the implications, because leadership's about understanding how A leads to B leads to C leads to D. And I think as you start getting these different tensions appearing, I think that there's a danger for these to be sucked into scenarios that they haven't worked out the implications. And I think that's why you're starting to seeing that pressure on leadership's coming up. And as you get into this autumn, as the economics around the world come through, and I think that's the big thing to remember, this is a global impact that is rippling in all sorts of different ways in different regions and different countries. And again, it's not one picture, it's a series of different, like one of those glitter balls with each different face being a different, slightly different. But the common element of pressure and change is consistent. And as such, any leader that says that they know where they are right now is either amazing or mad.
it brings the importance of the board into focus.
Well, so many of these things are simple and complex, and you're on this paradigm between those two things. So if you have a good aligned chairman, CFO, CEO, it's really, really easy. The balance is there. You know, the virtual element, you can't get necessarily in a room together, but virtually that balance works incredibly well. What you're starting to see is when that alignment isn't as clear, and then the pulling apart, because boards can be much more intrusive in this environment than normally. You know, at the end of the day, if you met once a month, because physically the only way to meet is about once a month. So to meet more regularly physically is very, very hard, but in the virtual world, you can meet every week. And so the element of boards remaining non-executive as opposed to becoming executive, I think, is much more at risk in a virtual environment. I also think that by very nature, when you go through a period where it's about survival, everyone is like that, and it's got to start settling. And I think that we're at that point where boards have got to trust again, and they've got to release right at a point when actually there's more pressure. And so that balance between alignment, trust, challenge is really difficult. You've then got an interesting paradigm, because you've got a series of board members who are probably at the end of their tenure, and as such, to a certain extent, are high health risks, so they themselves are under pressure. And then you've also got a series of non-executives where they're very early on in their plural career, and this is a really brutal point for them to be challenged, and to get the balance right between helicopter view and operational support, to get the balance right between supporting executives and challenging them and being happy with untransparent information flow, because that's the other component.
Yes.
It's a really difficult balance here, and I don't think anyone should underestimate the difficulties of that balancing act. And I think that's where really good chair, CEO, CFO alignment just makes the whole thing work incredibly well. When the little bits of problems come in, it's like one of those machines where it starts unpicking each other. And I think you're beginning to see that, and you'll see more and more of that as we go forward.
Are you hearing concerns among execs that the board's too slow? Because this, I mean, again, pre-COVID, pre the pandemic, the term should be hearing pace, agility, etc. But again, it's all been magnified under this current crisis. But are you hearing of frustrations around that?
I think you're seeing that from both sides. So you can see scenarios where the board are frustrated because they feel the executive pace is too slow, that they're not changing, not shifting fast enough. And conversely, I think you've got operational executives where the board are too slow and they're playing catch up and effectively educating when they come in. I think the point of it is that what you are saying is when there isn't that alignment and they're not together, you're drawing apart, and I think that they're not being as open. So I think the challenge now, when the gap's appearing, whereas before you might circle back and have off-record conversations, I think that's harder in this paradigm. So you're getting a lot of coming together on board meetings and very genderized discussion, but I think the gaps are appearing, and the circle back capacity is going down. And if you're running a global business, you know, you can't just fly into your market and meet with your divisional and regional CEOs. And the gaps, I think, appear.
And again, you are hearing the CEOs and chairs saying that you're having to work harder at making sure you have that extra video call, that you have that chat and that communication. You have to work harder at the communication, aren't you, in this environment?
I think that there's a danger that you can, in some ways, you can communicate more often together. So again, boards can meet and come together more often. But I think that you are more transactional in a virtual world. And so that sort of off-record chat becomes more difficult. I think that, and I think good boards still retain that, and good executive teams retain the ability to then not have the agenda item conversation, but to effectively have the off-record chat about how you're doing. And I think that component's really important. And I think that, you know, getting the balance right between really detailed and hard structural dialogue and then off-record chats about where are we and what's going on underneath the surface, I think is really important. I also think that it's really easy in this environment to get anecdotal information and build a whole business case around it. And there's a difficulty because you haven't got the data to support things. So in some ways, it's got to be instinctive decision making. But I think that makes a difficulty. If you've got a leadership team that's instinctive and a board that was analytical, you're getting into that conflict area.
Are you hearing signs or seeing signs that CEOs are going to be knocked out over the coming months? Do you see that frustration in the boards that, again, you've had the crisis period, you've had the support, but performance isn't where it needs it to be?
I think you've got this really interesting mix here, because I think there's a lot of boards now where there's a recognition the non-executives need to evolve and change. That's why we're seeing a massive increase in our non-executive practice at Critical Eye, because there is actually a recognition that you've got non-executive directors who really need to learn about the craft of what they're doing. And so investing in that skill is really important. And I think then you've also got the element where the board are looking at skill gaps, and then they've got to make decisions. Can they fill that skill gap through other means, or do they need to change? And I think that you've got to bear in mind that changing isn't easy in a virtual world. So again, if you can't touch the business, shifting a CEO, you've got to really understand why you're doing it, because culturally, sort of bringing in a new CEO into a strong culture is difficult at any environment where you can't touch the business. Hugely difficult. So I think you are going to see more internal succession. I think you are going to see enhanced investment in the skills that you've got around the board. And interesting, in our research, the talent still is number one issue for leadership and for CEOs. And I think it's great to hear that, because it recognises the fact that you can't just hire your way out of this. You've really got to have the bench strength. You've got to have the skills coming through, and you've got to invest through the cycle.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you talked about data and information flow. I think, again, it's interesting to see companies grapple with the fact that their customer's completely changed, and that there may be a view that that customer won't come back, or an acceptance that it's going to be different. Again, to draw on some of the research, 61% of CEOs said customers were the most challenging external stakeholder. I mean, again, is that feeding into what you're seeing? Are CEOs and senior execs asking some big questions around customer engagement and operating models? Because I think that's ultimately what it's feeding into, isn't it?
Well, I think that in these environments, the organisation that focuses on the customer and puts the customer at the heart of everything will succeed over the medium and long term. And that links to their investment plan. So if you understand and really understand your consumer and your customer, and you understand those changes and how they're evolving, you're going to invest in the development and R&D to ensure that you're leading them on that journey. I think if you're not, you're following them and you're following the market, you're going to have outdated information flowing very, very fast. Which, by the way, means you've got to be brave, because in order to really understand customer change, you've probably got to be just ahead of them. And so you've really got to have an instinctive capacity beyond just a data capacity, which is why, you know, people who really understand their market trends and really understand how that's evolving, I think will do incredibly well. I think if you're looking at short-term behavioural change and you're basing your strategic decision-making on short-term behavioural change, I think you could really get yourself in trouble.
So when you say short-term behavioural change, what do you mean exactly there?
Well, so if you take this scenario of retailers and retail footprint, and all of a sudden you've got a scenario where, you know, the whole footprint has changed, the consumer's behaviour has shifted, but that's because half of the things that they would normally do is not available. That doesn't mean to say that when they all come back on, that they're going to stick to doing things they're doing now. I think you've really got to understand what bit of the things that they're doing now are going to last, so that change of behaviour will stick, and what bit is purely because their optionality isn't there. And I think that understanding is really, really important, especially if you take the theory that's a tightening economically. So at a point, as it tightens, how will the consumer behaviour change? What will that mean to your margin? Mm. What will that mean to the more value-added elements of your business model? So I think you've really just got to understand that consumer change.
Again, broadly, do you think that execs recognise that it's different and that things will have to change in the business, or is there still a sense of hoping for things to come back to normal?
Well, I think that everyone, and if you look back and, you know, running Critical Eye for 17 years, there is always change, but there is also a degree of consistency. Mm. You know, people are still going to eat, they're still going to sleep, they're going to still need to travel. So I think that there is an element that things will come back. What I also think is that they will come back with different winners. And you've got to understand that people's expectation from you as a business is going to shift. And there's no question that digital elements and how you reach consumers is changing. By the way, it also means that the models that would have worked before would just be too expensive and inefficient. So it's not only that the consumer market changes, you're going to have models that just won't be able to come back in that format. And so they'll have to shift and evolve. And if they don't, then they die. So I think it's understanding how you utilise the power of digital to provide a better and better solution, and that ultimately, effectively, you've got a very efficient business model. And the efficiency bit is the organisational change. I mean, there's going to be a massive amount of drive now towards shifting operationally. There's a great example, one of the water companies, with one of the CEOs recently, and his comment is that with the consumers that they have is that they're traditionally older and not particularly digital, and so their form of communication is all very old-fashioned, is now shifted digitally. By the way, they can provide a much better information flow to the consumer in that model. They couldn't have done that before. So there's a massive upside as a result of effectively that change of consumer behaviour.
Yeah, I mean, I like the story as well of the CEO of a B2C business that said basically the past 3.5 months has completely accelerated its digital strategy, and it's now where he'd expected it to be in 2022.
Yeah.
And it's just a complete acceleration of change and transformation. And interestingly, so some businesses remain strangely untouched.
Yeah.
By some of them. So again, speaking to someone who's like, his big challenge is the same as it was before. He needs to strengthen the senior leadership team. He needs to invest in technology. His market's pretty secure.
Well, I think, again, if you think the customers really want service. Now, some of that service is standardisation, intentional, technical. Some of it is traditional forms. Now, you just got to be really world-class at things you're doing. Yeah. And I think that what the businesses that come out strongest recognise what the customer wants at the core of that and is able to deliver that to them in a better and better format.
Okay. What about sensitivity to employees? A lot of the, we've run a number of the of virtual events around mental health and well-being, diversity, inclusion. I mean, encouragingly, there seems to be a really strong debate around looking after your employees. That's something that can't just be about this crisis. You'd want that to continue going forward, wouldn't you?
Well, I think, and again, if you look at the information of every bit that we talk about, everyone recognises that talent is the most important thing in your business. And I think that trend has been there for a long time. I think what you are seeing is the alignment with purpose. your talent, and that alignment between those two things being clearer and clearer. And when they are fully aligned and the leadership buy into that in all levels, you get generally outperform businesses. I'm a big believer that if you look at the businesses that really have thrived, they've had a very strong culture that has outperformed because it was redefinition. If you look at the businesses that we've worked with that have done better than anyone else, they've had a really strong supportive culture. And I think, again, you can't underestimate that. And that generally also means you've got this right balance between developing and enhancing skills and then bringing them in. And I think there is a balance you've got to have between those two things, because in order to have a strong culture, you have to have a consistency. But we all recognise that we do need also to bring different things from different places and to get that balance right.
We talked earlier about the relationship between the CEO and the board, and the problem of non-executive directors crossing the executive line. How do you deal with that as particularly a first-time CEO? I think that can be quite an interesting situation to deal with. What advice would you have?
Well, Mark, we obviously do a huge amount of work in this area, and support a huge number of CEOs who are going through exactly this issue. I think the first thing to remember is that this is an operational environment. So the CEO is more powerful in a point of challenge than anyone else. And so it's really important you do recognise the importance of your role. Now, what does that mean? It means that if you're asked for things that your team don't have the capacity to deliver, that you say that. And you say why. Because it can be very easy when you're sitting in a turret a long way from the operational footprint to put expectations on the executive team. But they've got to, and the board have to understand what the implications of that are. And if you're asking for things that are going to take people away from the front line, then the board need to understand that implication. So the first thing is to make them understand why they're asking for things and to make sure it's critical information. So that's the first param. The second thing is to really make sure that you are working with a team and a non-executive board who really understand the business dynamics. And as long as and really focus on getting that clear with them, because again, it means that your alignment issues, and if they're coming off, spend out the time together outside the board. So try not to make it flare up on the board agenda. Trying to make sure that you then have more conversations outside of the boardroom to really build that relationship and encourage your team to. So if you take the theory that both sides are trying to work together better, if there are points of challenge, try to take them outside of the board meeting, which is all minuted. Third element is it's vitally important if you're there and the chairman relationship is poor, that you've got to align with the chairman. So you've really got to ensure that you work together. There's an old adage from chairs is the one thing you do is hire and fire a CEO. The one thing you need to bear in mind is if you've got a bad chair, you need to really look at how you remove them. Because again, if you're operationally executing and driving hard and the relationship isn't good and they're not adding value, then you need to talk to the SID and you need to talk to the shareholders, because it'll be very hard to emerge if you're not aligned.
And it's easy to allow that situation to just drag on and get worse. So it's the relationship, isn't it?
I think it's the relationship, and I think that, I think as a first-time CEO particularly, you don't have a reference of what a good chair looks like. And so benchmark with others, that's where we spend a huge amount of time giving CEOs access to other CEOs about what they've gone through, what they've learned. Make sure you do have a mentor that you can reflect with, because again, you're doing this, you haven't got necessarily the reference points. By the way, no one's got reference points in this current environment. So board behaviours are different in this environment. Now, as it gets tighter, pressure usually comes on. Now, again, understanding that, your job as CEO is to relieve pressure. So again, you've got to think about how you can relieve the board's pressure.
Yep.
How can you ensure that you get the balance right? Because ultimately, if you can't address it, what I can guarantee is it's going to feed into the organisation in all sorts of different, and make it very hard in a tight market to be successful.
I mean, many economists are saying it'll be 2022 before we get back to sort of pre-COVID levels of trading. There's obviously the V-shaped recovery, the Nike swoosh, many shapes have been put forward. I mean, we've talked about it being an operational environment. How important is it for senior leadership teams to be able to somehow find the space and time to step back and think about what's the medium to long-term view of this business?
I think it's essential. I mean, I think even more so in this environment than ever before. I mean, I think there's two things within that. I mean, with this summer, I think leaders have to get away. I think it's not a nice to have, it's a have to. I think you've been running at a high octane level. It's not sustainable. You'll just get tighter as you get into the autumn. So it's really important that you recognise that you set the tone in the organisation. You know, if you're calm, generally the business will be calm.
And it's interesting as well in the events, again, and some of the discussions that we've had is where fatigue is coming up more and more, isn't it?
There's no question it's there. Yeah. What I can tell you is if you haven't refreshed yourself now, you're going to have a really, really, really difficult autumn. It's a short sprint to Christmas and goes back to that sprint element. And you're setting the tone now for what happens next year. Now, the reality of it is, if you take the theory of marketing getting back to usual normal in 2022, which I think generally is the consensus, that will almost certainly not mean it's linear. It will mean that probably there's a tightening up of the marketplace the rest of this year. And then next year, for the ones that left, probably they're the winners. And so the opportunity now that you're playing for is huge. Mm. But you've not got to look at surviving between now and next year. You've got to look at putting the planks together towards the future. Mm. This is an opportunity that you will not see again for a long period of time. And so the opportunity for you to evolve, to change, to position yourself in the future is right now. If you're just running the business to get out of this, I'm afraid you're probably in the wrong place.
Is that what people are telling you when how they're thinking about their business?
I think good leaders are planning for tomorrow. Good leaders have good teams, which means they're not running. They're not running them. They're not in the business now. They're leading it. They are able to get out and reflect and share. And I think it's one of the reasons I've always said that leaders should be naturally lazy, because the whole point of it is you should be in good times, not in the weeds of your business, which does mean when crisis happens, you can drop in, which is what leaders have done. You now should be out of it again. And again, if you're still dropped into your business, there's no way you're changing it. You're just running it. Now, I'm afraid that isn't acceptable. And you've got to get yourself out. And by the way, you're probably going to have to let a few things fall and break. Because that's the other thing is, you know, in a good market, generally people don't like seeing things break. In a bad market, they have to let them fall and break. Get it faster. Get the breaks. Make it happen. Make mistakes still. In this market, you've got to be prepared to fail.
And again, it's echoed in the research with people and leadership development being a number one priority.
You've got to have the right skills in the right place. I mean, so again, if you're cutting back on people, you're cutting back on investment, you know, you're really pulling away from the engine room and pulling away from the fuel that you'll need to come out the other end. I mean, at the end of the day, your people will drive you out of this scenario. But they've got to believe in you, and they've got to see that you're investing in them. And that's not just physical investment, it's also means supporting them in different forms. So you've really got to get that engine right.
Right. I want to shift on to private equity now, because I think it's interesting to compare what's happening now to what happened in 2008, 2009. What do you think, for PE CEOs, what do they need to be focused on in this environment?
I think that the single most important thing from private equity perspective is access to debt and the pricing of debt. And we are seeing that change. And that will continue. So
changes in being more expensive.
I.e. being more expensive. And by its very nature, that means that the model gets challenged. And so now, is that a short-term trend, or is that a medium-term, or is it a long-term trend? Now, I think what we can all agree is that it's certainly a short-term trend, because, you know, in a higher risk environment, we're in a higher risk environment, why would you put money up at this percent when you can get that percent? Mm. So, and there's so many places where you can get that percent that why would you do it? So that's that. There's no question that there is a that is going to remain for a short period of time. I think the likelihood is, and again, if we're talking 2 years, that will continue for a medium period of time. And that does mean a number of the business model predications are now going to be challenged. So what I think will play out is what typically plays out in private equity. It'll get more and more difficult. Mm. So the backers will be tighter on you, and the stakeholder challenges will get more difficult, and you will be more isolated as a leader. And in our experience, private equity gets hit later than the listed marketplaces, because overnight listed marketplaces go down 20-30%.
Yes.
It's when you get into the refi position that it gets more difficult, and it's where your house gets under more pressure from their LPs. And so again, you're starting to see, I think, the pressure increase in private equity. And bear in mind, it's a winner's game, and if there isn't a win, then it gets more interesting.
Are you surprised by how supportive investors have been of PLCs up to this point?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that what has happened since 08 is I think it's been much harder for you to put debt into listed companies. Mm. And so there wasn't the you generally have got less businesses that are distressed. You've generally got good businesses on the markets where they haven't got a massive amount of debt. So there are obviously sectoral elements that have got real challenges. But other than that, I think that the listed marketplace is probably in a more resilient place than the private equity landscape.
Okay.
For exactly that reason. I also do think that you've had a scenario where there's been a wall of capital around, which has to go somewhere. And where do you put it? So you've got that component. I think you've then got the component that money has been there to prop up businesses. So if you've got a business, you felt that you did need to prop up your existing investments. Where I think it gets more interesting is this autumn, because I think that what you have had those fundraisings based on is lagging data flow. Mm. Now, as you get to this autumn and performance becomes more visible, I think it'd be very interesting to see how much you can fundraise and at what price point. So I think that what you had is probably quite a lot of organisations recognising this was early. It was such a short-term implication that they could raise money quickly and there was an appetite for it. But as you get into reality of how you performed, if you haven't performed well over this period, you're going to find it very difficult to raise this autumn. So yeah. I think you're coming towards a point where, again, it's going to be more and more winners and losers. If you have performed better than your competitive landscape, there's going to be a wall of opportunity for you.
Yes.
If you're at the bottom half of performance, you're probably in a position where you're going to be consolidated.
Yeah, and again, it's moving from that first stage of the crisis into the economic and financial crisis.
Correct.
Where it's Correct. It's going to be harsh. I mean, do you expect more M&A activity to start? From what I'm seeing, it's being discussed that some deals are happening, but it's not for 2020, whereas next year you would think there would be a number of opportunities.
I think that there will be opportunities this year. I think some will happen.
Yep.
But I think your volumes will be next year, simply because by its very nature it takes time. I think there still remains this huge uncertainty. There is a lot of talk about another share price correction. Mm. And I think people will be hesitant of buying things this one. But there are deals going through. And so it's not that there isn't opportunity out there, but I think there will be a hesitancy, and there is still remains an issue about, you know, information flow, transparency in a semi-lockdown environment. And so there is still a high degree of risk around deals. But no, I think the consolidation absolutely is going to come through, because in a tight marketplace, it's, you know, you're going to really need to be clear whether you're consolidator or consolidated. And I think that's where boards need to line up, because again, I don't think recognising that you're better off being consolidated is a bad thing. I also think you've got to be really clear about your business model, and anything that's non-core you should divest. And I think you'll see a lot more divestment coming through.
What in your mind, if like three things that you think CEOs should be focusing on in this period, this time of uncertainty that they're facing?
My biggest thing that for CEOs is be calm. You know, you set the tone around you and say, you know, the reality is that your employees need to see that you're balanced and calm and consistent. And I think it's really easy to be pulled into reactive leadership. And that's a real mistake. So my first comment would be calm.
Yeah.
My second element is be supportive. And what do I mean by that? You're working with boards and an executive team and senior management and staff who are going through, you know, a huge amount of challenging environments. You know, the element of their own life and their work life are more exposed than ever. And so I think you've got to have an incredibly supportive culture towards issues. I think it's too easy to say we just swap people because they're non-performing. I think you've really got to understand why they're non-performing, because that cultural piece is really key. And the third element is think big. I mean, this isn't the time for cutting yourself to the future. You've got to reimagine what you're doing. You've got a huge opportunity, and that's exciting. And people will buy into that, and the market will buy into that, and your customer will buy into that. And so in a normal flat market, people like winners. In a market that's evolving and changing, people love winners.
It's incredible, I think, the speed at which some companies are moving. Does that echo what you're seeing? Or
I think yes and no. I mean, I think at the end of the day, leaders are paid a reasonable amount of money to do a job. And so if I'm honest, I think it's quite easy in a crisis to lead. And I really think that the harder bit's coming, because you've got opaqueness, you've got difficulties on alignment. There's going to be a load of 50-50 calls, and you know, it's going to expose every element of your capability. So you know, I think you absolutely will see the strength of the leadership team over the next 12 months. And there's an old expression that was said to me a long time ago, which is experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And I think we're in exactly that marketplace where you're really going to get a huge amount of experience, but you probably wouldn't choose to have it. And I think you're going to really see the strength of the people around you.
Matthew Blagg, thank you.
Thanks, Mark.